It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We're off and running on a brand new month, and we begin it on a Friday on the front porch, on the horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to participate in the merry, madcap, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza of the multimedia variety that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password at HeadOn.live when you click chat room. And you'll be immediately greeted and welcomed and engaged by Anatole and Squeaky and VT Blom and others as they wander in on this first day of June 2018. We are pretty much, we're past midway through spring. We're on the downhill side of spring, headed towards summer, doggone it, and the summer solstice when the days just start getting shorter again. But nonetheless, it is, it's been a kind of a rainy, thunderstormy day. So, program note, I don't like program notes like this, but program note, if I should happen to suddenly disappear, it will be because the antiquated, rickety, falling apart, held together with spit toilet paper and baling wire, coal-fired electricity grid here in almost level West by Coal Trump Virginia stand has been taken out by a bolt of lightning or something. So that's just so folks will know, that's it. If it's just talking and then not talking anymore, that's what happened. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, we do begin a brand new broadcast month, and hopefully it won't be quite as much of a struggle as last month was. Last month got a little bit ugly, simply because of unplanned exigencies, but, well, can't help that. I do know, I can say now that I know for a fact that we will be gone, the 21st and 22nd of June. My aunt is being buried at Arlington National Cemetery, and we will go up for the interment. So that much we know is on the schedule. We have thanks to send out at the beginning of the program for our first of the month, first day of the month subscribers. Thanks go out to Lauren in Far Alberta, one of the Canadian members of our little family community congregation. Thanks very kindly to Peter in Austin. Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much indeed to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you, Vernon. Thanks very kindly to our buddy. I lose track sometimes. Our pal at Home Dirts. I know, but doggone it. Sorry about that. But thank you very kindly for your subscription. Thanks to Smitty in Florida. Thank you to Brock. Thank you very kindly, Brock. Thanks to Joseph in Washington State. And thanks to Kay in California, as well as thanks going out to Rusty. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you very, very kindly. And thanks to all of you who subscribe and help to keep the horn on the air from month to month to month. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thanks also to our Patreon subscribers. Those subscriptions will be coming out, today, and then probably early next week I'll do the list for them. Thank you very kindly, one and all. That's how we keep this program on the air. And so it is the first day of the month. There's something special that happens on the first broadcast day of the month every month, courtesy of Ralph's and courtesy of our buddy Laborman, Gary, and courtesy as well of an anonymous contributor who wishes to remain nameless. And that is Shirley's Memorial Challenge, put forward for several years by our dear friend Bruce up in Wisconsin. When Bruce passed away, Laborman and Ralph's and the anonymous nameless person stepped forward and said they wanted to see that challenge continue with the first of the month. So there is a $200 challenge on the table, and if it is met, if we can raise $200 this evening, then the people who kick in the $200 get their money doubled, courtesy of Laborman and Ralph's and the aforementioned nameless person. Okay, and that's a great way to get the month started. Thank you very much indeed. Hopefully it'll get met and we'll get it salted away and make it that much easier. There's actually, and I also got a note from our buddy Chris, ordinarily of the Northwest Territories. Chris has taken one of the longer plane rides available here on this little planet, flying from Fair Canada all the way to Cape Town, South Africa. He told me, in fact, that it was a 22-hour flight that was in which he caught up with a whole bunch of podcasting. And once he got there, Chris let me know that he wanted to put forward the Cape Town Challenge to add into Shirley's Challenge this evening. So there's actually $300 worth of challenges on the table that would get us off to a roaring start and help keep up with what will obviously be some thin days somewhere in the month, because they always happen. So there's $300 of challenges on the table. If we can raise $300, 10 people at $30, 30 people at $10, well, then, by Jove, the money, your contributions will be doubled, courtesy of Laborman and Ralph's, the anonymous person, and Chris. So, can we do that? It would be great if we could. The challenge will remain open through the end of the program. So we've got 3 hours to do it in, and hopefully. If it's not met by then obviously people who listen to the podcast also get their chance as well. But I try always to announce by the end of the program whether or not the challenge has been met, or put out a Facebook post later as to whether there's anything remaining in it. But that's generally how it works. Just a second. All right, so that should take care of all the housekeeping. Hopefully, we'll just knock this down and get it out of the way, and that'll just be grand. It is, of course, Friday on the front porch. I'm told that Sparky tells me he might be a little bit late getting back to the space folding laboratory there at the man cave. Had a doctor's checkup today. and maybe they'll help him a little bit with his knee. Had a note from Clarity. Subject line, Friday on the front porch. Clarity says, I have a gig today. We're playing a benefit for a summer speech camp. Say hi to the guys and gals of Head On Land for me. From the sandy onion fields of bumfuck East Oregon, BFEO, yo. So, Clarity says, hey. Hey to Clarity. That's how that works. But here in about an hour or so, depending on when Sparky gets back, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. You know how that works if you've, most of the people are familiar with how it works. If you want to participate, you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable room. He'll show you the breadcrumb trail, and it's a rousing, rollicking conversation that we have here at the end of every week. There's Steve from Georgia Stan wandering into the chat room in his guise of pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy. Hopefully we'll hear from Steve when the Friday roundtable fires up. There's legal stuff to talk about as well with our buddies Billable Rick and Steve from New York. I seem to recall that Billable Rick had a trial this week. I don't know if he's home from trial or not. We'll have to wait and find out. Or maybe I'll get a note somewhere along the way or something. Anyway, that'll all happen in about an hour's time. Where to begin? Like you, I grow weary of Trump. I grew weary of Trump years ago. Randy says the loss of net neutrality is about 10 days away. Better start raising hell now. Might be a day late and a dollar short at this point, Randy. I know what you mean. And what's his over at the Funky Communications Commission is probably just rubbing his hands together in Montgomery Burns-like glee, muttering, "Excellent." Yeah. But like I said, I get tired. I get tired of all the Trump stories. But some of them are unavoidable. The off-again, on-again, hot summer romance between Geezer Disgustus and Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants is apparently on again, but it's kind of hard to tell. He was all excited today because he got a special note sent from none other than Kim Jong Un. Yeah. To tell him that yes, the June 12th summit is back on. Well, okay. But the fact of the matter is the cantaloupe Caligula really, I mean, he's not a details guy. Trump isn't. Hold on here. So, he said, at first, after the meeting this afternoon, with the little letter. The meeting took place, and then Geezer Disgustus had himself a press conference. And it took about 10 minutes for him to lie about it. Reuters quoted him saying it was a very nice letter, a very interesting letter. And then 8 minutes later, he confessed he hadn't read it at all. Because he doesn't read things. Reading is so for losers.
What can you get done on June 12th?
Well, this was a very good meeting. Don't forget, this was a meeting where a letter was given to me by Kim Jong-un, and that letter was a very nice letter. Oh, would you like to see what was in that letter? Would you like... How much? It was a very interesting letter, and at some point I may be... It may be appropriate, and maybe I'll be able to give it to you, maybe. You'll be able to see it. And maybe fairly soon. But really, this was a letter presentation that ended up being a two-hour conversation.
Why did you respond to the letter? Did you send anything back?
No, I didn't. I haven't seen the letter yet. I purposely didn't open the letter. I haven't opened it. I didn't open it in front of the director. I said, would you want me to open it? He said, you can read it later. I may be in for a big surprise, folks.
So, either he did or he didn't, but he's so far gone now that he can't even, he can't keep track of his own untruths. And all the, look, it's not a surprise, all the, all the norms are gone. Things that, whether you agreed with a president or not, whether you were a Republican or a Democrat, things that, they're just gone. They don't exist anymore. Consider the jobs report that came out this morning, the employment numbers. Now, we're used to these things. They come out, what, monthly, quarterly? And it'll be a sentence in a top of the hour newscast on the radio. Do they still do those? Yeah.
May's job reports numbers were issued today, and it looks like we're blah 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 blah. More jobs were gained than were expected. Less jobs were gained than were expected. Let's go to Fred at the news desk. At the business desk.
Right. Well, it seems kind of mundane, but that's because we're proles and we're not moving vast amounts of money around the constantly nervous more nervous than a chihuahua in a Vienna sausage factory markets. Apparently, having access to these numbers can swing. Can swing trading significantly. It can affect whether you have a big day in stocks or whether you decide to go over and buy up a heap of treasury bonds, or maybe just a case of Old Panther. But one thing always obtained with these, and that was that the numbers were deemed to be something approaching sacrosanct. The federal government number crunchers crunch the numbers and they come up with the report and the president gets told and then the president sits on the information because otherwise it's it presents an unfair an unfair advantage to anybody who has the information and is able to act on it and other people don't have it. You know, like inside, that's sort of the essence of insider trading. But all the norms are just fucking gone. They're over. The rules that exist or existed in the past no longer obtain. And so that's what happened with the jobs numbers today. Trump was shown the jobs numbers. The Treasury officials who and Labor Department officials who see them early literally do so in a room in which they are not allowed to have cell phones. And they have to sit in the room after they see the numbers until something like 9:30 in the morning. Because the data is sensitive enough that it can make for a big deal. Did you hear that part of the clip about the little love note from Kim Jong-un? Where he said, oh, you'd like to see it. How much? How much? I think he was halfway not kidding. He would sell sensitive data. He would sell information to the highest bidder and may already have been doing it all along. Per the story we had earlier in the week, the National Security Administration, the NSA, said they knew well back early in 2016 that Trump was, in fact, a foreign agent. And that's a hell of a story. And it has sunk like a stone under the weight of Roseanne Barr and Samantha Bee. Just down the memory hole. Goodbye. Never to be heard from again. But that's what the norms are just gone. Because this morning, while he was, well, you know, executive time, he was twooping. And he put out a tweet. About the damn jobs numbers 2 hours before they, before they went public. Looking forward to seeing the employment numbers at 8:30 this morning. You don't say anything about the numbers. Nothing. You don't reference them. But Donald Trump does, because there are no longer any standards by way of getting around at the way. Well, it's not like he said what the numbers were, so it's not like it's illegal or anything. But he enjoys wrecking these norms. And by the time his term or terms are up, there's not going to be much left of this country. Oh, we'll still be called the United States of America. There will still be 50 states. There will still be Republicans and there will still be Democrats. But whatever passed for norms of decent government will be long gone. And it's kind of breathtaking to behold. Can you imagine what would have happened if Barack Obama had done something like that? Hell! Even with the lapdog press treating them with the deference that they did, even if George Bush, W. Bush, had done that, there would have been an uproar. But him, he's going to get away with it. And for all I know, based on the fact that his website was selling had a special Memorial Day maggot gear offering on on Memorial, trafficking on the backs of our war dead. Another year or so, and he'll be putting federal, probably be putting federal data on his goddamn campaign website to the highest bidder. Help us keep making America great. I'll sell you the July jobs numbers for a song. Yeah. You think I'm kidding, but I'm halfway not. Steve in New York says, subject line, the numbers. Of course he said what they were. He revealed it when he said he couldn't wait to see them. Because he doesn't say that about things that aren't good. But there will be no consequences. None. There will be no price to be paid. Nothing. And day after tomorrow or next week or something, another norm will fall. Because that's just how it is in Trump-merca now. That's just how it goes. And I don't know about you, but I'm not okay about that. Meanwhile, down in Florida, Darlene in Connecticut says he also revealed classified info to Kislyak. Oh, yes. In the Oval Office right after he fired Comey. There's a pattern here, or our knowledge that he has a propensity to do this is evolving with harder and harder evidence. Again, he has, all caps here, courtesy of Darlene, no impulse control. Being able to control impulses like that takes maturity. It also takes a fully functioning human brain, Darlene, and he hasn't had one of those for years. And the norms aren't just governmental norms of, how do we deal with the jobs numbers? Or how do we handle complex negotiations regarding the possible, nuclear holocaust? How do we, it's not just that, as if that isn't enough. It's our social norms. It's our societal norms. The norms of how we behave. And so take, for instance, Susan Goldstein, Once upon a time, she was a state representative in Florida for Western Broward County. And she's a volunteer for the Marco Rubio campaign. Rubio knows who she is. She's a big supporter. And she had a hissy over the whole Roseanne Barr kerfuffle. The Roseanne Barr racist incident. And by way of pointing out, no, I'm not kidding. Because you can just count on them to be who they are. It's like clockwork. By way of pointing out that she felt like Roseanne was unfairly dealt with, she said, and I'm not kidding, "And I truly think Obama resembles the Curious George cartoon, who I think is an adorable character." Curious George, that is. "That is what my eyes see, and I am not racist, and there is not mean-spirited intent in my observation, but I can't say it. Double standard." This is why people hate the press. And then when a reporter for the New Times asked her about it, she said, I believe there is a double standard. All I was trying to say is that I don't get why this comedian excuse works for some and not for others. I saw Wanda Sykes compare Donald Trump to an orangutan. Didn't we all evolve from apes? Isn't that what evolutionists agree that we all evolved from? So I don't understand why it's okay for a comparison to be made to an ape for white people, but not blacks. You'll notice that she uses the word people. She modifies the word people with white, but blacks doesn't modify anything. It's just blacks, but white people. Not blacks. And, of course, she doesn't understand that there's a half a millennium's worth of you know, dump trucks filled with the freight that is attached to these comparisons that are not attached to white people. And that's what makes it racist. So there you go. Like I said, it was like clockwork. You knew this was predictable. Just like there's one of these stories every day. Via the Indiana Daily Student, which I take to be the college newspaper at Indiana University in Bloomington. Apparently, the concept of a taco truck has reached as far as the heartland of Talibandiana. And a taco truck had pulled up in Bloomington, where a resident of that town, that college town, named Paul Farrow, got all up in the face of a man waiting in line at a taco truck. Punched him in the chest, used a racial slur on him, and told him to go back where he belongs. So then the guy who had punched the guy, Paul Farrow, allegedly was the puncher, he walked away from the taco truck and then went and sat down in a local watering hole. That's when the police showed up, and he proudly informed them that he considers himself a member of the Aryan Nation, which is another way of saying Nazi. And the police kept questioning him, and he started yelling racist slurs at the cops and at the bystanders, and the cops handcuffed him and walked him out of the bar. Here's where the story gets a little bit interesting. Mr. Paul Farrow, who identifies as a neo-Nazi, has a record. Back in 2012, he was apparently charged with arson when he set a stripper's car on fire. His Facebook presence apparently includes links to things coming from Klansman David Duke. He was booked on battery and disorderly conduct by the police, primarily because Talibandiana does not have a hate crime statute. No. Because, of course, hate crime statutes get little white wingers all upset. Well, what you're talking about there is making thoughts a crime. It is perfectly legal in this country to think racist things all the time, and we want to keep it that way because freedom. Which is a pathetic bullshit argument, because a hate crime statute does not criminalize thought. It criminalizes action in conjunction with a particular intent. Just like you cannot say, you know, okay, one of the little just a little pissant misdemeanor here in West Virginia. You can't prove that someone committed petty larceny unless you are also able to prove that in stealing, taking, and carrying away the goods, property, or effects of another, that the person doing the stealing, taking, and carrying away had intent to deprive the true owner thereof, of the said property. Well, that's just like, that's the same thing as saying that a person commits a hate crime when they do criminal violence to someone with the intent to manifest their racist impulses. That's not a thought crime. It's a question of intent. But, you know, there's one of those every day. How about Portland, Oregon? In which there's a little business called Back to Eden Bakery. Lillian Green went to Back to Eden Bakery and watched two people at Back to Eden Bakery serving people. And while she was in there, several white customers were still in the business and were still being served and orders were being taken. But when it came her turn, the two employees said, "We're closed." Now, to be fair, the hours during which the business operated, it was like 6 minutes after closing time, but the door was not locked and there were still folks in there doing business and being served. The co-owner of the bakery, John Blomgren, said sometimes impact outweighs intent, and went on to say he didn't think his employees were racist. But he did apologize, saying, "We are so incredibly sorry for the treatment you received from someone on our staff. What you experienced in our shop is absolutely egregious, and we're already taking all of the necessary steps to deal with this appropriately. First and foremost, we have let the two staff members go immediately, as there will never be room in our organization for anyone who is inclined to give such poor customer service." That's how you handle it. It would be better if incidents like that did not happen, but this is America. And because the norms have been destroyed, because what social or cultural norms we had are shattered into a million tiny pieces all over the floor, these things do happen now, and they happen more and more and more. And in more and more and more places. Because nowhere is immune to it. Just like South Carolina is not immune. Brant Tomlinson is running for Kershaw County, South Carolina Council. And a photograph recently surfaced of good old Brant at a Halloween party of some sort, wearing a shirt that appears to have green, yellow, and black decoration on it. I believe there is cultural significance to that color combination. But it's not really the costume so much as it is the fact that good old Brant there is in blackface. I mean, old-fashioned shoe polish blackface. Leaving his ears, his lips, and his eye sockets pink. Now, when asked to explain his appearance at a Halloween party in blackface, Brant Tomlinson said, "One of my opponents has apparently paid an antagonist to distribute a photograph in an effort to misrepresent my reputation. It is unfortunate that local candidates have now resorted to the same type of toxic smear campaign that have infected the political discourse at state and national level." And then explained that he went to that Halloween costume. He went to that Halloween party in that costume because one of his very favorite movies of all time is the fine piece of filmmaking called Cool Runnings. You know, the one about the Jamaican bobsled team.
Mm-hmm.
Betcha I know how he votes. Yep, because his Twitter feed makes it abundantly clear that he's a maggot. Of course it does. Yes, absolutely. Steve with a note. That dump truck. I wish it would run over that Rubio supporter. Oh, now we mustn't be so incivil. We've got to be better than they are, Steve. Someone's got to uphold decency in this country, don't they? Don't they? Oh, by the way, this is the 2nd June that Donald J. Trump has been president of the United States. It's the 2nd June of our seemingly endless national nightmare. And, well, how about that? Everyone pretty much knows that June is LGBT Pride Month, the month in which the LGBT community steps forward and puts on its best face and shows the pride that they take in themselves and in their community and in what the LGBT community does contributing to the overall well-being of the nation. Yeah. Well, over there, somewhere in the White House, they gave Geezer Disgustus his proclamation sign in crayon. And he sat down and signed a proclamation that said that June 2018 is Great Outdoors Month. Signed another proclamation that said June 2018 is National Caribbean American Heritage Month. Then there was the proclamation that said June 2018 is African American Music Appreciation Month. Probably did that for Kanye. He's got a record out now. Signed another proclamation that said June 2018 is National Ocean Month. And thanks to his policies, more people are going to get to appreciate the oceans as they get nearer and nearer their various and sundry homes along the coast. And, of course, he signed a proclamation saying that June 2018 is National Home Ownership Month. Know what he didn't sign? He did not sign a proclamation taking note of June 2018 as National LGBT Pride Month. Which it is and has been for a long time. For all I know, it's been Pride Month longer than any of the other things have been things. Let's see what Barack Obama said about it. He declared LGBT Pride Month in June 2016 and said, "Since our founding, America has advanced on an unending path toward becoming a more perfect union. This journey, led by forward-thinking individuals who have set their sights on reaching for a brighter tomorrow,
has never been easy or smooth. The fight for dignity and equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender LGBT people is reflected in the tireless dedication of advocates and allies who strive to forge a more inclusive society. They have spurred sweeping progress by changing hearts and minds and by demanding equal treatment under our laws, from our courts, and in our politics. This month, we recognize all they have done to bring us to this point, and we recommit to bending the arc of our nation toward justice. Ah, yes, June 2016. That was right about the time that the NSA said they pretty much figured out that they had an actual foreign agent in the person of Donald Trump. But it was also a heady time when we expected that Hillary Clinton, despite her many and obvious faults, would be the next president of the United States. Simpler times. But, you know, the norms are gone, and we can forget about any acknowledgement of the contributions, any formal presidential acknowledgement of the contributions of the LGBTQQQ community to our attempt to create that more perfect union. Because, see, if he did that, all the little maggots would start hopping up and down and just get furious and maybe go and beat up somebody or kill somebody or shoot somebody, you know, in a fit of economic anxiety. You know how that goes. Yeah, of course. Some teenagers in Milwaukee were making America great again. How? Well, it's been 61 years that Linda Zirbel has lived in the River West neighborhood of Milwaukee. And she was on her way home from the bus stop, had her lunchbox in one hand, had her cane in the other. She said, "I was almost to the corner, and this kid jumps out and puts an AR-15 to my head. The other guy came, grabbed my lunchbox, and they ran down Dousman Street. They got her lunchbox, they got her bus pass, and they got her house keys." She said, "It was very scary. I was just standing there shaking." Interviewed the day after the event, she said, "Every time I closed my eyes last night, all I could see was that gun." Two youths with an AR-15. Because I guess you can just save up your milk money from school and go and get an AR-15. Because freedom. A couple of mornings ago, I'd meant to bring this, back to the email. Stephen, New York, says, "You ever notice something? Whenever a person mistreats a black person, up comes the 'I'm not racist' without anyone even asking the questions. I remember my father saying something he learned from Watergate. When people deny something you never asked, that's their admission." I explained the same concept the other day with a reference to The Simpsons. You remember the episode where Homer develops a taste for licking hallucinogenic toads? It's also the episode where the writers introduce the word Jeebus into the national zeitgeist. But at one point, talking with Homie on the phone, Marge has become worried about his toad licking problem. And Homer's talking a little weird. And Marge says, "Homer, are you licking toads?" To which Homer replies,
I'm not licking toads.
That's kind of what Steve's talking about there. As far as being better than they are, Steve in New York says, I've never gotten rid of cockroaches by reasoning with them. Marty didn't care much for my argument either. Be better than they are, says Marty. No, we don't. We don't have to be better than they are. And as to the Nectarine Nero and the LGBT Pride Month proclamation, Marty says he didn't sign the proclamation. I wonder what the so-called log cabin Republicans think about being disrespected by their man. Well, they don't think much at all. The Republican part of log cabin Republicans is a lot more important than the log cabin part. Silent R. Lamar says, normal in America? Normal, hell, Bob, America hasn't been normal since before Ronald Reagan. Normal's just a memory. Or, as our departed friend Peter Godbold used to say, normal is only a setting on a dryer. A little bit of justice flowing out of all places, Salt Lake City. There's a mechanic there by the name of Wyatt Pack. He's apparently from Weber County, Utah. A video went viral of him engaging in a shrieking, screaming tirade against a Hispanic man named Jose Caballero during a Memorial Day weekend camping trip. Mr. Caballero was having difficulty with his vehicle, and the power steering had gone out on his truck. And he begins screaming at him, telling him to fucking move it. I'm a fucking diesel mechanic for Weber County, and I know you're fucking stupid. Reached for comment. A Weber County spokesperson said, we're sickened and outraged watching this video. This type of behavior is completely unacceptable and does not reflect the helpful, kind customer service attitude we expect of Weber County employees. Well, he's no longer an employee at Weber County. He also got canned from his job at P&P Power Sports Repair. Because in addition to screaming at them, he then offered to tow the family, the Caballero family truck, and then made him give him money for it. Because see, all those maggots, they're not all racists. No, they just, you know, they just have that
economic anxiety.
Sure. And all the norms aren't gone. I mean, so what if Donald Trump wanted to give a little nudge and a wink to his pals so they could maybe make a couple of extra gajillions in the market? I mean, what are all these rules for anyway? I mean, they
No, they're not all racists. Well, here's the trick.
Spend no more than 5 minutes talking to a maggot, and you'll find out pretty quickly. Call it a 5-minute rule. If in the course of a conversation with a maggot, you say something like Colin Kaepernick, you'll find out real quick. Yeah, they are. Or Roseanne.
Yep.
And we can't solve the problems in this country unless we identify them. Busy, busy, busy. That's the mantra from the Church of Bokanon. In Kurt Vonnegut's, Cat's Cradle? Nice, nice, very nice. So many little machines all in one device. Busy, busy, busy. Meanwhile, a note coming in. Steve in New York says, I'm offering a 26,775 South Korean won challenge. That's $25. So that in terms of challenges, that means we got $325 worth of challenges on the table to get us off to hopefully a bit of a good start for the month of June. And thanks very kindly to another member of the fraternity of Steve, namely Steve from Georgistan, who jumped in early on in answer to the challenge. So there are $305 left in the challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Steves. Thank you very kindly indeed. So with 3:05 to go and a good group in the Horn chat room and folks itching and raring to go in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable room, well, let's take our top of the hour break and see where the conversation takes us. Okay, shall we? Yes. Now, if you'd like to try the Friday on the Front Porch group, and you're welcome to, we'd love to have you. It's not complicated at all. Skype is easy to set up. And all you have to do is fire up Skype and send a contact request. Look up Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc. And Sparky will and send a contact request to Sparky Dunc. Not me. Send it to Sparky. And Sparky will get you into the group. And you'll be part of this rather unique little discussion group that we have at the end of every week, and proves quite often to be a whole lot of fun. Shall we? Let's do. with a long-distance dedication for market manipulator Donald Trump. A little something from the Grateful Dead.
...1974. The Grateful Dead from the Mars Hotel. Money, money. It just seemed appropriate for a guy who, you know, a guy who would sell his country out in a heartbeat. Sure. It is Friday on the front porch. We've got a good little group gathering together now. Quick something to share with you. This day in history moment, courtesy of our good friend Eugene Finnerman, the most brilliant satirist of history out there anywhere in the internets. On this day in 1779, Benedict Arnold was court-martialed
for malfeasance. Eugene notes, a presidential pardon is expected momentarily. People are figuring out more and more that Benedict Arnold is really a good guy who got a raw deal from the federal government. At the time, however, the Continental Congress disapproved of fraud, and there definitely were some financial irregularities in General Arnold's bookkeeping. Apparently, during the American attack on Canada, the French must have overcharged him for poutine, and he lost the receipts. Yet he was exonerated on all but a few misdemeanors. His next venture, however, attempting to sell West Point, would prove more difficult to excuse. Yes. Honest to God, oh dear, would you be surprised? Would you be surprised if Donald Trump issued a pardon to Benedict Arnold?
I think enough time has passed. We need to heal the wounds.
Not me. Not a nickel's worth of surprise would I be. So let's go over and check in with Sparky, among other things. I don't think that I haven't that I've forgotten or anything. We've got a shopping report to get, Sparky. Oh, Sparky. Anything come unplugged? Wait a minute. It's happened again. Nope, that ain't it.
Testing.
Yeah, there you are. I kicked the cord loose again.
Stop doing that, Bob.
Big feet. I mean, just really big, big feet.
What, are you trying to air them out or something? You're sitting there.
No, there's just not a lot of room down here. It's all uninterruptible power supplies and computer cases, and it's a snug... I'm looking in the man cave right now. I don't have anything near that kind of open space.
Well, like I told you before, it's a 20 by 40 foot building.
Right, and I'm in an 8 by 10 foot room. Or maybe 8 by 12. Okay, 8 by 12 probably. So now that we've got the audio squared away, shopping report?
Well, I thought I told you I had to cancel the trip.
Oh, no. See, that's probably before I got the audio plugged up again.
No, I sent you an instant message, too.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh. Because plans got changed at the last minute. And I've been watching Grady for the last...
Oh, I did see that Grady had come back to visit.
That's a live shot of his bed. I thought I'd have a Grady cam going, but sorry, be against the fan.
Yeah, so you've got the Grady bed, but no Grady.
No, he's out in where I had the tomatoes planted, digging gophers. Yesterday, he caught one.
What'd he do with it? I mean, I've seen Labrador retrievers do things like that, and usually they're even more surprised than the gopher is.
Well, guess what he did with the gopher?
Did he eat it?
Yep.
Of course.
He had the brown tongue to prove it, covered with dirt.
Did he, I'm not going to ask.
Well, then I made him go splash in the pool and get some water to drink.
Didn't bring it and show you his trophy or anything like that, no.
Oh, I saw it. I went to get a shovel to pick it up because it was all gooey and he'd been chewing on it.
Well, there went the dinner hour somewhere in America.
So anyway, I went over to get get the shovel. By the time I turned, come back with the shovel, I seen the tail going down his mouth.
Oh, God.
Yeah, one of those Hannibal Lecter noises. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
Good times.
And a couple more people to the group tonight.
Yeah. So, is there a rescheduled date or is it just TBA on the shopping trip?
I'm hoping to go tomorrow because Saturday it is discount day.
Ooh, is that just general discount or a senior discount?
10% off day or something.
Nice.
But anyway, my stepson and his wife will be back tonight. He had to run over to Reno to take care of some business.
So, what was the dragon thing that you're looking at? What was it called again?
Queen of Dragons.
Yes.
You just Google it. It's in Shasta Lake City.
Okay.
Which is just north of Redding, so it's about a 40-mile drive.
Well, thinking back to the bad old days, 40-mile drives are nothing.
Oh, I know. I used to drive a lot when I was working, but I just don't do it anymore.
No, I mean in service of the effort to, you know, get a little something to, you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I never had to do that back in the day. Seemed like. I know in Thailand it was just go downstairs out of the bungalow and make a left and you were in front of Papa's aunt's place.
Well, I'm looking at their website now. That is one high-resolution photograph of a bud there.
Yeah. The inside of the store looks pretty good, too. Just display cases and everything. But I'll see.
There's a little banana sherbet seedling just popping out of the ground. Oh. Just a baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a picture there, and you know how you got the little when you plant in the little cups, you know, and you put the little tag in to show what each one is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it says banana split. Banana split.
Okay. I tried my hand at growing some sour diesel last year in some pots, but it didn't work out. I don't have the green thumb for that. Tomatoes I can grow, but the pot, no.
Well, they got a bunch of fun looking stuff. Ooh, there's Super Lemon Haze. Orange bubble gum looks interesting.
Well, I'm going to make up the shopping list before we go. I got to check with him. Because what happened is he decided to go with his wife to Reno instead of staying here. Stiffed.
Yeah, he took his wife and left you behind.
To watch Grady.
Okay.
That's grandpa stuff, Steve.
Yeah, just wondering when the rest of the U.S. is going to get wise and just make it legal. It's time. You know, this is the way Prohibition happened. It didn't happen all at one time. Little states started catching on, jumping on. Of course, the feds came in first and said, yeah, it's legal now. But believe it or not, there's still places in Alabama and Alaska that are dry counties, and you can't get it. And it's illegal to have it.
What, booze?
Yes.
Yeah, I grew up in one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wet. Crazy. It is wet now, but grudgingly so.
Right. Right.
Well, that's why I called Tama County a tri-county for marijuana. Because you can't buy it here.
But I figure as soon as they realize the tax revenue that they're losing, then they're going to wise up. Because everything's always about the money.
Yeah, you look at that Queen of Dragons, and they got a, I did see they got a picture of their license from the state of California.
It's almost just more like tourism for me. I think it would just be cool to walk into a place and go, look at this, son of a gun. We are never going to have this in West Virginia. Never.
Never. Oh. Never in Georgia Stan either. It's not going to happen.
Did you hear the story about Oregon?
Know what?
Do tell.
Employers are having a hard time finding people who can pass a drug test.
Well, you know, I mean, it's humorous, but sooner or later, we're going to have a more comprehensive approach to what it means to be under the influence. Because, frankly, you know, there are places, Oregon, where weed is legal, and, you know, so is beer. But tell me who you want walking through the door to start their shift at 8 o'clock in the morning. Somebody who drank 24 cans of Keystone Light the night before, or somebody who sat down and puffed up a number and they're completely okay?
The Keystone Light person.
You know, the Keystone Light person's all hungover and bleary-eyed, smells like a vat, you know.
Yeah, coordination is all to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they have tests now that will detect booze going back 10 days. So, I don't know.
What you do in your off time is your business as long as you're not impaired on the job.
Exactly.
And eventually it will lead to some sort of testing regime for finding out, you know, if you're currently, you know, stoned. Because it'll be good for the DUI business.
All right, well, yeah, and what's the cutoff point? I mean, if you burned a big fatty last night and this morning you're riding around and you're straight as a judge, are you still going to be able to be charged for a DUI because it's still in your system?
Precisely.
You know, I mean, I've often wondered that. They're going to have to concentrate on a cutoff point, something that's fair.
Well, they're going to have to – the first thing they have to do, Steve, is they have to come to a realization – that having the residual in your system is not the same thing as being under the influence. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And maybe they could do it via cheek swab or something. I don't know. There has to be a workaround for this.
Meanwhile, in the hypothetical I posed, Brother Deacon Asa just said... I'll take the drunk over the stoner every time. They're my peoples.
Gotta love Asa, man.
that reminds me of another question. I mean, just because I've talked many times. I love your early Kyler avatar, Steve. Do you actually own an honest to God early Kyler booty hunter hat?
No, but any hat Early has that you see him wearing, there used to be a website. I don't know if it's still there. I'll have to research it. Any hat Early has, you can get it. Anyone that you've seen on Squid Bellies that he's like, man, I'd like
well,
to
we
have
need,
that.
Well, we need to take up a collection to buy you a booty hunter hat. I mean, with Miss Karen's permission, of course. But
she would be fine with it. She loves Squid Billies as much.
But you know, if the day ever comes that you know I'm somewhere and you're somewhere, and I want to be able to recognize you because you've got your early Kyler booty hunter hat on.
Well, I think that should be able to make that happen. Just Google it, or it should be on Prime. So, how has Bob been?
I'm doing okay. You know, we're at the end of the week. It's been weird. Like I said, it's like August, and so it rains for a couple of hours every day, and any hopes of getting any weed eating done just get dashed. I mean, you gotta have. I mean, because grass is wet in its own nature when you cut it, and if it's just sloppy wet from rain, you're not gonna get any effective weed eating done.
Bob, I don't know what's going on weather-wise on your end, but here that subtropical storm has wreaked havoc with the heat and the rain. Well, look, there's Grady.
Hey, there's Grady. That a boy. There goes Grady chasing something.
But yeah, I mean, in fact, I may drop off tonight because we get these vicious storms out of nowhere, and it just all hell breaks loose. And if anybody's ever wondered about the dog jackets that keeps your dogs calm during storms, they do work. Well, Cletus will attest to that. They work for Cletus. I never had a dog get so freaked out over storms before, but if I put that, I don't know what it's called. I'll grab the box or something. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's called a dog jacket or a storm jacket.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're being hugged, and it does work. It really does.
Oh, I hate the thought of little Cletus being scared of thunderstorms.
Oh, she hates that, or if Jack Hee-Haw is out there shooting his shotgun, that freaks her out, too. And it does me as well, you know.
Well, I mean, it doesn't do me any good when my neighbors decide to cut loose with a couple of hundred rounds, either.
Right. It's like you're in a war zone all day. And it's like, why? I mean, I can see you wanting to set your sight, you know. That takes 10 minutes. But they're out there all freaking day, hours upon end, just boom, boom, boom. And I just don't get the fascination with that.
Well, I've told the story before, back when I was building the swing set many, many years ago for the kids. And I was sitting there getting frustrated, because if you've ever built a metal swing set according to directions, good luck. It's just it's a maddening exercise.
It's like a charcoal grill from Walmart trying to build it by the directions. Oh. They always have, you know, all kind of spare parts. Yeah. And you're like, well, okay, well.
These bolts has got to go somewhere. Together.
This had to serve a purpose, but it's not going to serve one for me.
But I was sitting there trying to get the corner post into the with the little plastic and the whatnot, and all of a sudden something goes zing. Sounded like the angriest hornet I had ever heard in my life. And a second later, wow. And I looked down there, and my neighbor was drunker than Adam's off ox and just, you know, shooting his .22.
And that's whizzing by your head. That's what you're hearing.
And I stood up, and I said, what in the eternal name of God Almighty do you think you're doing down there?
Point that thing the other way, man. What is wrong with you?
And I hear holler back, you want a beer?
Well, no.
No, I want you to quit shooting at me. Oh, damn. Sorry, man. Oh, fucking bet. I felt the air move on one of those things.
And I'm not going to thank you for pruning my trees, asshole.
Or my ear.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, you got it as bad as I do. Probably worse.
Guess what I discovered this week?
What's that, Duncan? Tell us.
I got a racist in the neighborhood. Just bought the house. It was for sale around the street.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ.
You know how I could tell?
By the rebel flag hanging up? Or...
Yeah, you guessed it, Steve.
The devil's diaper.
Yeah. They ride around here with them on their pick-em-up trucks, just flowing in the breeze, proud as punch, man.
Oh, I saw a bunch of that when we were over in Virginia. I saw a bunch of that. Just driving down the road with their devil's diaper flapping in the breeze. And by the way, that term, that's one that Bruce, for whom Shirley's Memorial Challenge is in remembrance. That was one of his phrases. He came up with that. The devil's diaper. Referring to the Confederate battle flag.
Well, Bob, before I get cut off due to the pending storm, there is something that I wanted to table about that dirty habit that you have. And I'm not gooning on you. Did you catch it this morning?
No, I did not. I had to get up and get out and get going. Why?
I'm kind of glad you didn't, because Morning Joe had a fucking spleen over what Sam B. said yesterday.
Oh, yes, I did. I caught a little bit of it.
And he was trying to play the both siderisms card, and nothing goes through me worse than that. I mean...
Oh, you mean the fact that he couldn't tell the distinction between what Roseanne said a lot more awful than...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, Sam B. said something about a body part that's horrible that we don't use, but what Roseanne said goes back hundreds of years, degrading good people, you know. And
we don't use that term, but by God, Donald Trump has. You know, there's a tweet for everything in his timeline,
right.
And he's used it
with a Y attached to it. Absolutely. And it hasn't been that long ago. Access Hollywood. I mean, our memories aren't that short.
So, there's a philosophical question, Steve. When the Access Hollywood tape came out, if he had used the C word instead of the P word, would that have made it more reprehensible? Or would all the little maggots just have excused that, too?
According to Washington Journal, it would have been on priority.
How do you mean?
I mean, according to Washington Journal, he didn't mean nothing. That's just locker room talk.
Yeah, it's just locker room. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But and what really pissed me off, and I got to thinking about this, Morning Joe and Mika, they were instrumental in dumping this orange monster on us. So how dare they sit there and feign this fucking outrage?
Oh, look, I mean, they are who they are. Marty just pointed out, hell, there's a tweet from Roseanne using the C word.
Well, I think it's they want to keep their cushy job. I think a lot of it falls back to that. And that's why, you know, Joe has had this so-called epiphany, where he has seen the light. Bullshit.
And now he's seen the light, and now he's an independent.
He is still who he is. He's always going to be who he is. He got us this dickwad, and we can't let this go. We cannot excuse this. If we do, then that's their fault.
I mean, it's like I've said before. A leopard does not change its spots, and neither does a skunk change its stripe.
Right. And I understand, and I like it too, and I agree with a lot of things he says, especially since he's had his epiphany. Sometimes you almost find yourself falling into his trap. But today really pushed me in the right direction. I'm like, fuck Joe. I'm sorry, Bob. I don't mean to curse on your show.
You're more than welcome to. You don't have to worry about that. I mean, I have a story from earlier in the week about him delivering some sort of sermon from on high, in which he said that he's tired of Republicans who will criticize Trump for what he does, but then turn around and vote for whatever he wants. He said, I'm tired of speeches. I love Jeff Flake and all these other guys. I'm tired of speeches. You want to do something? You know what? There are two votes. Jeff Flake needs to find somebody else. Whatever the issue is, if it's ZTE, you go to Bob Corker, you go to somebody else and say, you know what? I know personally because we did this, and say, we're shutting the floor down. We're not going to pass anything else. We're not going to pass any of your appointments. We're not going to do anything until you come over here and your people talk to us. You'd almost, you know, and that's what you got on May the 29th, 2018, when I've been saying it for what, a year? You know, when the first little Parthian shots with the rubber tipped arrows went out, and then these bold, never Trumpers turned around and did exactly like the good little dogs they are and voted for whatever he wanted. You know, I called bullshit way back then.
Yep.
And it's just now dawning on Joe. Bless his heart. He may get there slow, but he'll get there.
But one of my main points that I can't stress enough is, and I'm probably channeling Driftglass, I think his name is we can't let these fuckers off the hook. They got us George Bush. They got us this illegal war in Iraq where innocent millions of people were slaughtered for no fucking reason other than the fact that George Bush had a vendetta.
He tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam. We're going to take him out.
We cannot let him off the hook. We need to hold them accountable for this shit, Bob. And we can't forget. We cannot forget.
No, and by the way, you talk about millions of dead Iraqis. The new story, the new study that's come out that says, just to refresh people's recollection, Steve, do you remember when Geezer Disgustus said to Puerto Rico, "It's a good thing it wasn't horrible like Katrina was."
Oh yeah,
remember
it's,
that?
It's in the thousands. The
yeah, it's upwards
now.
Of 6,000 dead.
Jesus.
From Maria.
And the original number they threw out was some paltry number, less than 100, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was ridiculously low. But that's because they were only counting what formally came into like coroners and morgues and funeral homes. Didn't count people swept out to sea or left to rot on a hilltop or something like that.
But Bob, before I get out of here, let me just say, if we left them off the hook, that is on us. That is their fault. We cannot let these fuckers off the hook. Go ahead, Duncan. I'm sorry for interrupting, sir.
I'm just saying the number of people that died from having no electricity to run their oxygen generators or whatever medical equipment they needed.
Yeah. Or and just dying in sweltering heat of heat stroke, heat frustration. And it's upwards of 6,000 people. You'll not be surprised to know there has not been a tweet about this. And somewhere around half the people in Puerto Rico still do not have electricity.
And now it's kicking up again.
And here comes hurricane season. Right. It's terrifying. If you lived on that island, it would be a horror to contemplate.
But
electricity grid is worse than yours, Bob. That's for sure.
Oh, it is. It is. And mine's awful. Oh, here's a great example. Speaking of my power grid. So, and this was going to be a topic of conversation anyway, if I had a hand in it. The Trump administration has come to the conclusion that it would be a mighty fine thing to keep coal-fired power plants from going offline and being replaced by cheaper frack gas. And anytime you talk about this issue, I mean, you have to say frack gas is toxic too. But they're getting the Energy Department says that it would like to use its emergency authority under two federal laws. And remember, Joe Manchin was the front end of this. He wrote a letter some months back, and they want to force power companies and power plant operators to buy their electricity or their generation capacity from facilities that are on the verge of being shut down as being obsolete, being retired because they're coal-fired and they're not worth a shit anymore. And they want to do this under the guise of national defense. There's a draft memo that's going around that says federal action is necessary to stop the further premature retirements of fuel secure generation capacity. In other words, they want to keep burning coal. They don't care how many people they make sick. They don't care how many people die. Now, on the other side of that equation, I've mentioned that the power company here, Appalachian Power, want something on the order of an 11% rate increase because they're just itching. Well, they've gone to the Public Service Commission and said, hey, guys, we'd like to buy some wind turbine farms, and we'd like to make the ratepayers pay for it. Now, why not dip into your corporate reserves to pay for it? One, because, you know, that's just, you know, Wall Street doesn't like that. But two, if there's anything that they could do that I would be halfway willing to listen to and tempted to be supportive of, it would be expanding away from their rickety-ass old coal-fired grid and into some renewable resources. Well, the Public Service Commission in West Virginia, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, just told them, no, you cannot buy those wind farms. Now, if that's not the perfect picture of just how backwards and how thoroughly owned and controlled this state is by the coal industry, I don't know what is. But it's not just here, it's on a national basis. The Trump administration wants to force people to burn coal. Some of the language from the memo says, too many of these fuel-secure plants, and by fuel-secure they mean coal-fired power plants and nuclear plants, too many of these fuel-secure plants have retired prematurely, and many more have recently announced retirement. Oh my God. They're doggedly determined to hang on to outdated technology. It got so bad that even Arnold Schwarzenegger got in on the act. He trolled Trump via a tweet and said, I eagerly await the administration's regulations protecting pagers, fax machines, and Blockbuster. I'm going to give Arnold a cowbell for that. Absolutely. And buggy vips. You guys still there?
Yeah, I got a bone to pick with you, Bob.
I didn't say windmill.
No, not that. The other night you called me a lineman.
No, you said you were an inside lineman.
No, I'm an inside wireman.
Oh, wireman. Okay.
There's a difference.
I'm absolutely.
I'm a narrow back. Linemen are strong backs.
Ah, okay.
I'm here, Bob, but there's a lot of good people that I'd like for you to bring in if you get a chance.
Absolutely.
You
know,
check out Ken from Hawaii.
Yeah, is that you, man? Hey, Ken.
He was there typing a while ago.
I think he was saying he was having problems finding a mic or something, and hopefully he'll do it.
Well, I'm glad that I didn't realize that was Ken in Hawaii, but because I've been worried about him, being as how people are, you know, having a volcano out there.
No, he just typed. I guess he doesn't have a mic. Just listening to you or something.
Oh, okay. Hey, Ken. So, how about typing a message and letting it, how affected have you been by the eruptions?
I just wanted to say hello.
Hey, Larry.
Hi there. I don't know. I was brushing my teeth. I'm going to mute, and I'll be on for a little while, and then I'm going to go out for a little while because I'm getting houseitis. So I'll go out.
Is that the Bay Area equivalent of cabin fever?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting in my apartment. In any case, I just came in during your discussion of what's happening in West Virginia, and my only comment, if it means anything, is that I'm really tired of the way in which this country organizes its institutions and the ways in which it produces things. And we not only have a problem with the energy industry, we also have a problem with the financial industry and just about everything else. And I'm really frustrated and angry and don't know what to do. Aside from getting educated about it, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I can do on an individual level.
Well, education is the first part, and then using your obvious communication skills to reach out and let people know how you feel about it. You know, even when you're in a place as liberal as the Bay Area, nothing can be taken for granted. And Congress people want to hear that people are in agreement with them, and you're fortunate enough to have responsive, decent, progressive representation, especially in the House.
By the way, you know we have a primary coming up this next Tuesday.
Right.
We have a gubernatorial primary. I'm sure that Duncan has let you know that there is a primary happening. And it looks like I'm going to be voting mostly for women this time around. You know, at least my choices. So that
you're not voting for Feinstein, are you?
No, I'm not going to vote for Dianne Feinstein.
Okay, good.
But I'm going to vote for another woman for that position. We have a very interesting and confusing assembly district race with 12 people running in it. And it's anyway, I don't have anything really pithy to say today, just that I'm frustrated, and I don't really follow the news on a day-to-day basis, Bob, because it's just too annoying and it's just too annoying and frustrating. And
well,
gossipy.
That's what I'm here for, Larry.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me let you get on with the program.
All right. Well, stick around. Chime in if you feel so. Feel so inclined.
Oh, I'm going to a Democracy at Work meeting tomorrow. That's Richard Wolff's group where he's trying to get he's trying to develop the concept of worker self-directed enterprises. So I'm going to the third meeting of that, and then there are other things that are happening this weekend, like a fair in Berkeley. So there are things going on this weekend. Anyway, yeah. Let me let you go.
All right, and Larry, on the way as you go to mute, Randy wanted you to know. He said, if you don't want to do your own lobbying, you can support independent media and national citizen organizations like U.S. PIRG, Public Citizen, Common Cause, Earth Justice, the ACLU, Amnesty International, etc. And he's right.
Well, thank you.
And I'm particularly fond of Common Cause and Earth Justice.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the suggestion. And hi, everybody. Hi, Rick. Hi, Charles. I hope you're doing okay.
Well, thank you, Larry. And it's good to hear from you.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, Charlie. How you holding up, buddy?
Ah, okay, Bob. How about yourself?
You know, it's a great day to be a West Virginian.
But well, I've been putting out resumes and all and not getting any hits. So I don't know. I may have to go out and buy me a pasteboard box and find me an overpass to live under.
Let's hope not. I need to communicate with you a little bit off air. I'm going to send you an email after the program. About something you may find interesting.
Oh, okay. I appreciate it. Have you got my email address?
Yeah, you emailed me the other night, so I've got it.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
Can you shoot me an email with your home address so I can send you that patch for your goose?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I can.
I've misplaced it somewhere.
The goose. Agnes brought
no,
this.
No, the address. I've misplaced the address.
Yeah, not the patch. But Agnes walked in the other night with a stuffed goose, you know, like a toy. And somewhere she found a little vinyl leather bomber jacket that she put on it and put a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles on it. And she just held it up to me and said, guess what its name is? And it only took me a second, and all of a sudden I realized, Goose! You know, from Top Gun.
That's right, Ice.
Yeah, oh, that I guess that makes me Ice.
Iceman.
No,
or
I am...
You
want to
be Maverick.
No, well, okay, I'll be...
You want to be Tom Cruise?
No, I do not want to be Tom Cruise. I don't know. No, you can't make me. I'm not that short.
He's small, and he's got really bitey teeth.
And I'm also not that Scientologist.
Hey, you can come up with your own call sign.
Well, no, I got Goose over here. That means I got to be... It's all about the movie, Sparky.
Are you going down?
Yeah, okay.
Goose! Yeah. But yeah, I'll do that. Sparky's going to send an SR-71 Blackbird patch to put on Goose's jacket.
Oh, thank you, Sparky.
Hey, no problem.
That's awesome.
Story about those patches.
Yeah?
When I joined the Utapau alumni group way, way back when, there was an old retired master sergeant that, seeing as how I was the only one in the group he's ever met that worked on an SR-71, he sent me a whole bunch of patches, and he sent me an SR-71 Mach 3 cup. Because I have the SR-71 model that I got, which is an official Lockheed giveaway thing on a wooden stand they have. An old CIA guy that we knew got it for me after, you know, this was years after I was always already out of the Air Force. He gave me that stuff, the collecting stuff, you know. But I worked on those planes for 2.5 years.
That's neat as hell.
And I made 3 trips to Okinawa with them, too. Because that's back when we were flying spy missions over Vietnam, North Korea, and Russia. And maybe China, too. Who knows?
And they got how much longer in flight? I mean, they actually expanded in length in flight.
Well,
I read
the skin expanded.
Yeah.
And they didn't get longer. The skin expanded from the heat. Because the one thing about an SR-71, when it came back after a flight, first thing is the guys get the cameras off and everything, and then they set out the drip pans. And they had the brake coolers on because the brakes are really hot from the landing. They set out the drip pans the length of the body of the plane because it's going to start leaking. As soon as the body of the plane cools, the fuel tanks will start dripping.
Sounds like an MG midget.
They try not to keep the tanks very much fuel in the tank because it's mostly a. Because I don't know if you've ever heard this story. They take off with the minimum fuel load, and then they have to hit a tanker within 20 minutes after they take off.
Yeah, and then refuel in midair.
Yeah, and they usually did that at least 3 times going and 3 times coming back from Vietnam. The tanker would be in a flying in a zone, and the SR-71 would be up 100,000 feet going Mach 3, and when it hit the refuel zone, it dropped down, find the tanker, fuel up, and then go back up again to 100 high because of less friction. And then after they go over Vietnam, they make the turn over Thailand, and they start hit another tanker and come back. Yeah, about six tankers for the whole trip.
Amazing technology.
The KC-135s were a special model because they had to SR-71 ran on it. Nobody else. The JP-7 instead of JP-4. So they had a KC-135, it was called the Q model. And it was just made for refueling SR-71s.
Yeah, it was just a flying gas tank.
Yep, that's all they did. And then they rotate the crews from Beale Air Force Base, just like the maintenance people. You'd spend a 90-day temporary duty assignment on Okinawa, and then you go back to Beale. And they'd rotate the planes maybe once in a year or so. When the plane had to come up for a phasing inspection, they'd send it back to the States. And then the funny thing is, they'd have to send them back to Lockheed, and the code was that they had gone to Iran, which was a skunk. The letters meant something. I can't remember what it was. Them go to get updated. They'd be gone for a while, and then they'd see him come back. And they made several changes on it while I worked on the plane. I mean, they upgraded to a nose that had side-looking radar in the nose and had a rotating camera in the nose.
Amazing. And Goose will now be properly adorned.
We hope so.
Yeah. And Marty just said, that's one thing the French and British had gotten right. The Concorde didn't leak. Of course, there's Mach 2 versus Mach 3. Yeah.
Mach 3 plus.
Yeah.
Its top speed is classified.
Yeah, it just generally, as a rule of thumb, written down as really freaking fast.
Yeah, the muzzle velocity of a 30-06 bullet.
Hey, Sparky, I think we've got a couple of folks trying to get into the conversation, or one person trying to get into the conversation, and Billable Rick says he needs you to zap him and bring him back.
Okay, I see that now.
Marty asked a minute ago which women was Larry voting for Senate. He says, I'm voting for David Hildebrand.
I haven't heard of him.
Well, Catfish on the other chat, Catfish Blues on the Malloy chat, or the ex-Malloy chat, as it were, suggested Allison Hartson, so I'm looking at her and thinking about voting for her rather than Kevin DeLeon. That's who I'm thinking about right now. Okay, I'm going to go back to mute.
Okay, thanks for the update, Larry. Sparky, Marty wants to know if you ever ran across a Sergeant L. Johnson. Said he would have been an older black man.
No. I was at work zone from 71 to 73. A lot of people worked on them. But I had...
What kind of clearance did that take?
Secret.
Did it blow your mind the first time you set eyes on one?
It blew my mind when I was in technical school and I got the orders. And somebody goes, "You're going there? You're going to be working on SR-71s. Somebody in technical school had to show me a picture of it.
Well, you must have scored pretty damn good.
Well, I was the second one in my class that graduated tech school. I was racing another brainiac. And I got held up on a RB-66 bomber display thing that we had in a hangar next to the school. And he figured out his problem fairly fast, and I couldn't. So... he graduated ahead of me. But I had an electronics background from high school and college before I joined the Air Force. So everything was pretty easy for me.
So as a, let me ask you, as a veteran...
Back, Rick?
As a veteran, Sparky, are you disgusted by the fact that we actually deport veterans of our armed services?
Yeah.
I mean the idea that you can serve 4 years in the Marine Corps and wind up deported.
There's a lot of people that come in and they join up and get the promise of citizenship, and something keeps them from getting it, I guess. Because you used to see every year Obama would be sworn in a bunch of people in the military that come from immigrated from other countries.
Yeah.
I'm sure you won't be seeing that from the Donald.
No, but we're still using them.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where that trans ban is at the time either.
No, I ran across that story, and it's just sort of galling. One individual was deported. After he served his hitch and everything, he got deported because he got busted for a felony drug conspiracy charge. And then boom. So he held his Memorial Day observance on the Mexican side of the border. Just seems sort of essentially wrong.
Well, I know they've gotten a few of them back. I've seen video of a couple of them coming back. Seems like it's been in the last year or so.
Well, it's just kind of a shocking story, this one coming out of the Texas Tribune, about a guy named Lorenzo Nunez, whose name is also Michael Evans, did 4 years in the Marine Corps, and then got busted and deported.
while he was still in the Corps?
No, he'd served. He was honorably discharged.
Oh, okay.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, there's Billable Rick.
Yeah. I was. I missed like an hour of the program. I had to kind of give my boss a blow-by-blow of what happened at the trial on Wednesday and Thursday. So up in San Francisco.
Yeah, probably all hard work and no fun, right?
I don't know. It's kind of I kind of like trials actually because they test you. You know, it's kind of different from the usual you know stuff that you do as an attorney. So, you know, it does get the juices flowing. Let's just say, you know. And we had a fair judge. She was a former federal prosecutor from the I think Northern District of California. So. You know, we got up there. I got up there on Tuesday. Monday night. Monday night. Yeah, basically, I worked all Memorial Day. My travel Memorial Day. That was a travel day. And then I met up with the expert witness was on the same flight as me. And then we ended up meeting up with the client. We all took the same car from Oakland over the Bay Bridge to San Francisco. Stayed like at the Marriott Union Square. And just pretty much, you know, began our trial preparation. And then I worked a very late night, as I recall. It was either Monday night or it might have been Tuesday night. I think it was Tuesday night. And went into court Tuesday and just had the case assigned to a judge by the presiding judge. And we were told that the judge it was assigned to wasn't in that day. So, you know, I asked if we could have a judge that was in that day because we wanted to start the trial. And no, that's not the way it works. You can't really do that. They sort of randomly select a judge and you got to take who you got. And so we sort of took it easy Tuesday then and I got a workout in. And then we met with the client again and the witness and we got everything squared away. So we had a little more time for prep. So that was okay. And had 2 days of trial, and we presented our case, and now I'm in the middle of examining the franchise tax board auditor who made the determination. So that's kind of where we're at now. But it's kind of funny. I hadn't met the client until Monday. He's a real nice guy. He bought like all my lunches and all my dinners. You know, I didn't expect that. You know, normally we have to. You know, buy our own food when we're in trial status, but he's like a multimillionaire and just a really nice guy, so.
I'm sorry I missed you, Rick.
Oh, yeah, well, it's not really, you know, I was going to try to swing something in. I was thinking since the trial's not over, I'm back on Wednesday, just, you know, we'll finish up the trial on Wednesday. I was hoping I could have my, make it a long weekend with my girlfriend and maybe fly up on, instead of flying up on the night before the trial, we'd fly up a few nights before the trial and have a couple of nights together. And then she could fly out like on Tuesday when I'm starting trial preparations again. But I've got to meet somebody at the office on Monday. I've forgotten about that. And I've also got a hearing so on Tuesday. So I don't think that's going to work.
So, but, I mean, was this trial in the sense of, you know, jurors in the box and long-winded instructions
no.
and...
No, it's just a civil refund suit, and the state of California has not waived sovereign immunity for jury trials in refund suits. So, yeah, it was just a bench trial, which makes it a lot easier, because with the jury, you've got to, like, pay attention to everybody.
And it's exhausting, and the voir dire, and the instructions, and the Jesus, jumping Christ.
Yeah. Hey, is that Grady the shop dog I see there?
That is Grady the shop dog.
You're a good doggy.
Sure,
Grady.
Sure is.
Grady. Hi, Grady. Grady, speak. No.
You can't hear you when I got the headphones on.
Oh, okay. There you go. There you go. Oh, my gosh. Look at him. All right. Well, that's good. I bet you're happy to have him back, huh, Duncan?
I don't know about that. Are you digging up the garden or something? Fierce looking for gophers.
Oh boy. Well,
he's just exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
And when summertime's coming, my minion will be over to help me, and he can fill in all the holes for me.
Yeah. Home. Actually, I took like an executive jet to get up there to Oakland, but flying back, since I didn't know what night I'd be flying back, I, tried to have my office reserve a flight on the executive jet and couldn't. So I had to fly commercial Southwest and got back, and the parking lot where, for the private jet service or whatever, that, like a private commuter jet service, they were closed. So I had to like take an Uber back home and come back and get my car today. So that was, I guess that was only wrinkle. It took us about maybe, after the trial yesterday, it took us about an hour and a half or an hour and 50 minutes to go across the Bay Bridge to get to the airport because of all the traffic. And plus the NBA game was going on, all the traffic.
Oh, what a game.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I didn't get to see
it's a good it's a good thing we don't have any Cavs fans in this conversation, because they'd just be swearing a blue streak.
Bill Reitzman is from Cleveland, I think, isn't he? Or
he is. But I mean, he's not in the conversation right now. I mean, the damnedest thing I ever saw.
Yeah, that's
at least
at least
as basketball games are go. Oh, before we run out, yeah. I have it updated where we stand on the challenges for the evening. We started out with $325 worth of challenges on the table, courtesy of Chris, the Cape Town Challenge, and the Shirley's Memorial Challenge in memory of Bruce, that comes around the first of every month, and then the South Korean Won Challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York, and thanks to Brian and Charlene. Thank you very kindly. We went on down from 305 down to 280 down to 250. So we got $250 to go to finish off the challenges this evening. So hopefully folks will respond to that, and we'll get it knocked out, and that way we'll go forward in good stead come Moran Monday. So that's where it stands. We got $250 to go on $325 worth of challenges. I think we can say that Steve's challenge has been met, Chris's challenge has been half met, and Shirley's challenge is unmet. So that's where it is. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly indeed for your help in that regard. And thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan for getting it all started. Thank you very, very much. Okay, so sorry for the interruption.
Oh, that's fine. So has Steve left the room?
He had to turn off because it was a thunderstorm, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was texting with him earlier, I guess chatting with him when I was I told him about the concert on Sunday, or no, on Saturday night, and I know that neither he nor Bob were real impressed with Lynyrd Skynyrd, the new, iteration of the band. But actually, they were quite good. But I'd say the more surprising part was the undercard. I had no idea there would be such good bands in the undercard. The Outlaws played for maybe a half an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were. They still sound great, man. Greengrass and High Tides, and we got a couple others. They played the ones I've heard. And they actually started like about 5 minutes before six, which was 5 minutes early. There were four bands. And then there was Blackberry Smoke, which I know Steve has played in that. He's jammed with, I guess, the guy named Charlie, who's in, I guess, maybe the band leader. I'm not really sure. So he knows those guys. They're from Atlanta. I figured he knew them. I thought he'd mentioned that band at some point in time.
Well, it's a little tiny. It's a little tiny little town, Atlanta. Everybody knows everybody there.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, like L.A., Bob. Right? Yeah, just a tiny town, huh?
Yeah, just a little mission village.
Yeah, right. And so then Blackberry Smoke was really good. I thought they were amazing. They play a lot of good cover songs. They actually play better cover songs than the original bands that played the covers that created the song a lot of times, I think they even did a reggae song somehow, a country reggae song. Don't ask me how that works, but it worked. It was great. And then Then the next band up, which I had no idea would be there, was Bad Company. And I thought, oh, that can't really be the real Paul Rogers, because I would have heard about this. But it was. And he sounded great. I mean, the guy, at first, he wasn't real as strong at the start of the program, but the more he sang, the stronger his voice got, you know? But, I mean, that guy's amazing. And the band is just tremendous as well. And then there was Skynyrd, and then they playing for like 31 years now. And what is it, Johnny Van Zant, the youngest brother of the Van Zant family, I think, who took over the reins in like 87. He said, he made a comment about how, he never expected for this to last more than 6 weeks. It was like, I guess it was like a kind of like a gimmick at first to start the band up again. And, after the other guys were dead, basically. And, he got it started, so he was like amazed at how, the longevity of the band. And, the screen behind the band was just tremendous. It was like kind of a circle. It was like a kind of a half circle, semicircle, and just really, really good, stuff. I'm glad I went. I had fun. My ears were ringing afterwards for a couple of days though, or for a day. It's always my left ear. So I think I need to bring my earplugs next time. Once they say, okay, we're going to turn it up to 11, that's a pretty good sign. It's a pretty good sign it's time to put your earplugs in, but I'd forgotten to bring them. I left them in my car. And I think that entering the stage, my son pointed out a sign, no Confederate flags, no Confederate banners, no Confederate something else. It's like, oh, what the hell? And so I had to take a picture of that, but I guess they don't, even though they have the stars and bars from, the Sweet Home Alabama song, they don't.
Well, that's actually the Confederate battle flag. We have to keep that straight.
Well, that's true.
The stars and bars is the one that looks a lot like the original American flag.
Okay. Yeah. That's true. The Alabama state flag, I guess.
No. It's not the Alabama state flag.
Oh, it's not.
No. Okay. Yeah, it's different. It's horizontal bars, and then there's a corner with a red field, I think, and the stars in it.
Okay.
Basically, the Confederate battle flag is based on the St. Andrew's cross.
Okay.
And that's something Ron and Raleigh pointed out a little bit ago. He said, if it's about heritage, not hate, the simpletons, if they knew anything about the Confederacy, they'd fly the stars and bars and not the St. Andrew's cross.
Ah. Okay. Got it. Well.
And, technically the flag of Alabama is a variation on the St. Andrew's cross. It's a white field with a red X across it. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, I learned that it's actually, that flag, you don't see it flown this way. It's flown rectangular, but it's supposed to be a square.
Oh, really? Huh. It's very interesting. But yeah, that kind of caught my eye, so I had to take a picture of that.
Were there any in there?
Huh?
Did anybody bring their battle flags or anything?
No, they left them. There were signs right at the front. I think they would have been kicked out if they'd have flown them.
Well, good for them. Good for Skynyrd.
Yeah, and they also did a fundraiser for the Shriners Hospitals there. They were selling CDs. Like a two-disc CD for like $20. I didn't have any cash with me, so I couldn't buy it. But they were promoting that, and they obviously don't like guns, because after the Saturday Night Special song, he talked about it a little bit. we don't need none of this crap, So.
Well, and that's one of the things that makes them sort of not what a lot of people think they were, especially the original band.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday Night Special is an anthem against carrying guns.
Of course it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, he sang it with a lot of passion. I think he's, and then they have a new song they open up the show with called Skynyrd Nation, I think, which is actually a pretty good song. I don't know if you've ever heard that, Bob.
I haven't.
It's like maybe in the last couple of years, if that But no, they're good. They're really good. They did a great version of Freebird for the finale, for the encore. And
all 14 minutes?
I think so. It's maybe 12, I guess. Yeah, I like long songs. That kind of annoys people when I'm at
the greatest, the greatest disc jockey bathroom song on earth.
I don't think so. I think it's probably Inagata De Vita is the best one, Bob. Huh?
No. It's Freebird. It's Freebird.
Is it okay? Yeah. Freebird. Okay.
And it wrecks your time clock so that you. You wind up having to make up stuff along the way and fill with commercials. By the way, Steve from Georgia Stan says, damn it, Bob, I can still hear you. I did jam with Charlie from Blackberry Smoke. I was hosting the Dahlonega Bluegrass Jam, and Charlie showed up. We jammed. I wouldn't make that up. Why? I didn't think you did, Steve. No.
Ask Steve how long they've been around. I think they've been around since maybe... They're like maybe 10 years old or so, the band. I'm not sure. Or maybe 15 years. I don't know. They were the youngest band by far there at the show.
Just so you know, Inagata De Vita was my high school graduation song.
Really?
Class of 69, baby.
So it was the theme song, huh?
That night, anyway.
Nah.
In the Garden of Eden is what I think it was supposed to be, but they changed the name because the lyric, they sung it differently than that.
I heard they were just wasted out of their minds on acid, and it just came out, in the Garden of Eden, honey. Yeah.
They probably were. Oh, speaking of music, I'm going to see the Monkees on Saturday night, or what's left of them, the Mickey and Mike show, I guess it is. So that'll be interesting. I'll see how they are.
Is it just Mickey Dolenz and Mike Nesmith now?
Yeah. Yep. That's all they got left, I think.
Did Peter Tork?
I don't know about Peter Tork. Larry might know. Larry seems to know these things.
Larry doesn't know anything about the Monkees right now.
Okay.
I'll be back in a second.
He's not dead yet.
Francisco Franco is still alive or still dead.
No, he's still dead, yes. Let's see.
They lost Davy Jones, I know.
Yeah. So he survived a bout with cancer, but yeah.
Peter Tork, huh?
Yeah.
But he died eventually.
No, he's still here.
Oh, he's still here. Oh,
that's what
okay.
I said. He's
well.
Not dead yet. But it's probably just as well that he's not on the tour since you're going to the show.
Oh, Bob. Hey, none of the acts that played last Saturday are dead yet, as far as I know.
Where was the show last Saturday, Rick?
Well, it was in an area that I usually don't go to. It has interesting demographics. It was at the Glen Helen Amphitheater in outside of San Bernardino, California. And it's basically on Indian land. It used to be, I think it's on the San Manuel Reservation. And it's a real like park-like atmosphere because they have the seats below in the amphitheater, and then up high they have like grass, like they have a hill that goes up, and you can like put your blanket on the grass or have a picnic or chairs or whatever, and then they have hills like in the background, so it's in the countryside actually, so it's actually quite pretty, and the crowd you get there is a little rougher than I'm used to seeing, let's just say, you know, like in LA, you know, you don't have as many, you know, namby-pamby liberals there, I think, you know?
Well, thanks for the update on that, and I appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I was unaware that Leonard, that Skinner was on a tour.
Yeah, they're supposedly their farewell tour. They're calling it the last of the street survivors or something like that. So, you know, Bob and Steve last week were kind of saying, oh, you know, they've had farewell tours before, you know. So.
Well, you know, Paul Simon and Joan Baez.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple other people, Elton John and a few other people, have decided that they don't want to tour anymore, or I guess they don't feel that they don't feel the need to tour, or don't
feel, or they don't feel they have it, maybe. Paul Simon doesn't have it. I saw him a couple of years ago. He should have hung it up. He sounded horrible at the Democratic convention. He sung a song there, if you remember, in 2016. That's kind of how he sounded when I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl a couple of years ago. So, yeah, he's lost it. So he shouldn't be touring anymore, I don't think, you know. Some guys, you know, like Tony Bennett still sounds great, for example. The guy's over 90 now, you know. But some people just don't, you know, maybe they don't take care of themselves. Maybe they're, you know, their vocal cords change, you know, get older, you know, they just don't have the same vibration, whatever. I really don't know. Bob would probably.
Well, I mean, not, I mean, I think it, you know, performance is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it night after night after night, especially so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, now I'm curious. Lee tells me, Lee says, I wouldn't call this a spoiler, but Peter Tork has a soundtrack credit in Breaking Bad, so I don't know if I've gotten past that yet or not, but...
is that the Crystal Blue Persuasion, or what is that?
Spoilers!
Hey, the series ended 3 years ago, Bob.
Not for me! There's a lot of people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who have a lot of emotional investment in seeing me get to the end of this.
Are other members
you
of the family?
You can do it, Bob. You can do it.
Are other members
I'm not
going to
do it if it gets spoiled. I'm what?
Are other members of the family watching the same shows as you watch them or not?
No. They're just waiting. You know, you still watching, Bob? You still watching? Yeah, I'm still watching.
Oh, okay.
I took about a two week break.
Okay. So what episode did you leave off with?
I'm at season 3, episode 4.
Okay. I'm not sure what happens there. I better not tell you.
Well, no, I can tell you. See, if I tell you, I'm not spoiling.
That's true.
I just got past the two badass guys from Michoacan getting ready to bump Walter off when they get the text message Poyos.
Oh. Okay.
Early in season 3.
Okay.
And his wife just had just had sex with her boss.
Ah, okay.
The guy who does the fuzzy math with the books.
Ah, okay.
Now we know where you are.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The
no
sex deal comes back real strong.
The Scott and Punky just said, "Hey, Billable Rick, ixnay yeah. on the aching ad bay talk. Ixnay on the aching bay ad bay talk."
What's translation on that?
Ixnay on the Breaking Bad talk.
Oh, there you go. Okay, Scott's
trying to protect me.
Okay, well, that's good. He's a loyal member of the family there, Bob. You got to watch out for these unscrupulous lawyers out there, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, yeah.
Hey, so watching, there's a new season of Goliath coming out on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
just curious to see if it'll pick up with the same characters, because like I said, I thought Billy Bob Thornton was pretty much done at the end of the yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very good show.
Yeah,
and I had the basketball game to follow.
Yeah, you were happy with the outcome last night, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I was like, "Are you shitting me?" And the buzzer went off, and he's
standing there holding the ball,
looking at LeBron James and going,
"Huh?
I thought we won."
Huh? Look at the frickin' scoreboard, dude. That's sort of like, how does that compare with Chris Webber's calling a timeout at the end of the NCAA tournament game?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, the Michigan Fab Five when they didn't have the timeout to take.
Foul on himself.
I think this was worse because we're talking about professional athletes here.
Okay.
And then he tried to lay it off on LeBron. LeBron was screaming at me, and I got confused. And then you just knew that overtime was not going to go their way.
No. Well, LeBron.
Steph Curry goes off like that. They're all starting.
LeBron must be exhausted.
Yeah.
That seventh game against Boston, I saw LeBron do something that I have never seen a basketball player wear another basketball player like a cape on the way to the basket. I mean, it was deep in the fourth quarter. He was nearing his 48th minute on the court, and he still goes up, and he's got that one Celtic literally hanging on his shoulders, flapping in the wind like a fucking cape. And I'm like, this is the best guy ever to play basketball, period. I mean, I know Michael's got his fans, and, you know, I'm kind of old school, Magic, you know, Bird. God, you know, when I was a little kid, my dad had me watching Jerry West and of course, you know, Kareem and Bill Russell was kind of before me, but damn nation. Never seen the likes of him.
Well, I think all around, as an all-around player, he probably is the best ever. I hate to say that because I'm a big Michael Jordan fan, but hey, you know.
Michael Jordan never got his team to the NBA Finals 8 years in a row.
Is it 8 years? Well, LeBron has also not won as many titles, so Michael's got six.
Yeah. And LeBron probably won't get six, because very seldom is he going to have that kind of talent around him, because it was the talent that, you know, not taking anything away from Jordan, but it, you know, Scottie Pippen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
LeBron ain't got no Scottie Pippen.
Mm-mm.
Well, he's got Steve Kerr, but
not quite the same.
Yeah, no. No, Kevin Love's always injured.
Or Dennis Rodman.
There you go. So Bob, what's going on in the legal world? You made reference about wanting me to weigh in on some stuff.
Well, I just saw, I saw an article earlier today of some legal scholars making the argument that a sealed indictment against Trump would get around any major problems about it interfering with his presidency or, you know, any of the typical bullshit that they try to use as an excuse not to indict him for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to check in with you on the pardons.
Yeah. Well, let's go with the pardons first. That's kind of the easy thing. Yeah, I mean, he seems to be trying to pardon people who got convictions against other folks for crimes similar to those that he's committed, and who actually, you know, are his political enemies or somehow related to his political enemies. Like, I know Pat Fitzgerald was, I think buddies was with Comey.
Yeah. Yeah, every one of these pardons has a connection that runs a through line to Mueller.
Yeah.
You know, Dinesh D'Souza, did you see the shitty little tweet that he put out?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, a year ago Preet Bharara tried to ruin the life of a fellow Indian. Now he's out of work and I'm pardoned.
Jeez.
I'm a fellow Indian.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, not a fellow American.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. That guy is such a fraud anyway, Dinesh D'Souza. He came up with the idea of, was it Clinton cash or what the hell was that?
Oh, you're talking about the Clinton body count? No,
I think it was called Clinton cash or whatever. It was about how the Clintons are so corrupt and...
Oh, he worked that side of the street, but Clinton Cash was somebody else.
Oh, okay, maybe that was...
And the Washington Post and the New York Times jumped in with both feet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he is such a jerk. You know, I wish he could be deported, but he probably was born in America.
Well, see, but the thing is, pardon or no pardon, his guilt is still established.
Yes, actually, in fact, the premise of pardoning somebody is that they basically express remorse. They basically admit that they have broken the law, and despite that, the we'll call it the king or the president in this case, you know, decides to, you know, to forgive their crime, so to speak, to wipe them away, you know? And I think the way he's doing the pardons too, it's sending signals to these other guys who've either been indicted or are threatened with indictment that, hey, if you stay firm, then, you know, I'm going to, you know, let you off. And he also seems to be focused on this idea that, you know, it's no big deal if you're convicted of, you know, lying to the FBI as Martha Stewart did, or as Michael Flynn did, you know, or, you know, funneling campaign contributions illegally, like D'Souza did, you know. He made, I think, he basically made, what do you call it? It's when you make a contribution, when you get money from somebody as a contribution from them, and then you siphon
it. It was a kickback.
Yeah, it's like indirect campaign contributions or something like that. Yeah, it's a violation of the laws. So yeah. If you do things like this, if you're convicted of crimes involving dishonesty, it's okay. Don't worry, I'll let you off. It seems to be the message, you know.
Well, but isn't there a wrinkle here? I mean, This is all supposedly, and you know, no less than Roger Stone has said as much. That this is a message being sent to Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn to keep their mouths shut. Mm-hmm. Of course, Flynn's already pled guilty, and Mueller can ring him like a bell if he doesn't live up to his end of the bargain.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep your mouth shut, I'll take care of you in the end.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we
right.
know, and we know from what Gerry Ford did with Nixon that there is such a thing as a preemptive pardon.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But if Trump preemptively pardons,
mm-hmm.
then the people he pardons have to testify, don't they?
Right. Yeah. And as we've discussed, that does not protect them from violations of various laws of the states either.
Right, but I read somewhere, I was told on Twitter today that New York prevents, and most of this would focus on New York, but New York prevents states, or prevents state prosecutions where federal prosecutions have failed.
Oh, well, But a pardon isn't the failure of a federal prosecution, necessarily. You know?
Well, it seems to me if New York has a crime that has elements that are different from the new, from the federal crime, it's a different charge, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in civil rights cases, like with the Rodney King beating, Stacey Kuhn and Lawrence Powell and the officers who beat the hell out of King. They were acquitted by the Simi Valley jury, but then the Fed stepped in and indicted them for civil rights violations. So, you know, you have separate sovereigns there that are basically vindicating
different rights and interests. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Rick.
Uh-huh.
Let's say there's a preemptive pardon.
Mm-hmm.
If the person pardoned refuses to testify,
mm-hmm.
that brings in civil contempt, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can the president pardon? I mean, the pardon power extends to criminal cases, not civil, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So to the okay. So what I'm thinking about is Joe Arpaio.
Okay.
Now he was charged with criminal contempt, and that's what he got pardoned for.
Right.
But civil contempt, you hold the keys to your own cell, right?
Right. Exactly.
And so can so the president couldn't do anything about that.
No.
And no, can there be multiple instances of civil contempt, or is it just one count the minute that they refuse to answer questions?
Well, I think it's probably one count. It's not even a count because it's really, you know, a civil penalty. It's a civil sanction. It's to coerce compliance with a court order. In this case, it would be a court order requiring them to testify as to, you know, the matters for which they've been, you know, pardoned. So, you know, what you would do generally is I think the civil contempt can generally last as long as it's necessary to obtain compliance. I don't think it's necessarily tied. I think for criminal contempt, it can only be for so long as the term of the court or something like that. And I think that's been interpreted to be like no more than a year or something like that. But I think civil contempt, I mean, the idea is that, you know, it's going to, you know, it's going to be as long as is necessary to get them to talk. And once it's been determined that the coerciveness of the imprisonment is not working, then there's usually a hearing held and the decision is made whether the defendant should be released from prison. Okay, so in other words, the coercion is not working, so therefore at some point you say, okay, we give up. So that's pretty much how it works. You can't just lock the key and throw away, you can't lock the cell and throw away the key with civil contempt.
No, you have to leave, well, you have to leave the key in the hands of the contemnor.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But I guess you can't be, you can't be imprisoned indefinitely. Interestingly, we had a case at my ago, maybe, where a guy was imprisoned for not complying with an IRS summons, and it was a civil contempt in prison. And so after about a year and a half, the judge decided to hold a hearing as to the status of the contempt sanction and so decided to let the guy out. But everybody forgot about this guy. And I suppose he must not have been complaining because he was probably getting 3 squares a day, you know?
3 hots and a cot, man.
3 hots and a cot. You got it. That's right.
I do have some good news to share at 20 minutes before the hour, 20 minutes before the end of the program. Silent R. Lamar jumped boldly out there and took us down to only $50 to go on the final remaining challenge. And then Randy jumped in and took us down to only $25 to go on the final remaining challenge. So there's $25 to finish off all the challenges and make a make a red letter day out of the first day of June here for the horn.
Okay, I'm going to throw the $25 in honor of the two remaining members of the Monkees that are still playing, Bob.
Well, thank you, Billable Rick. That might insulate sure. you. That might insulate them against your eldritch magic.
Maybe so.
Although I got to tell you, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, don't worry. I'll be good. I'll make sure I don't.
No untoward hand gestures.
No.
Looking at various cardinal points of the compass or anything like that.
No voodoo dolls.
No libations with beer on the floor.
Yeah, right.
No.
So let's go back to the pardon issue then, Bob. There is a possibility that I mean the right to pardon is a constitutional it's a right that a president has to do, but like any of the rights and obligations in the Constitution, none of them is absolute. So if a president strategically pardons people so as to try to insulate himself from possible impeachment, removal, or maybe even indictment, if that is allowed, then it's possible to argue that the use of the pardon power can be considered abuse of power that would be impeachable. That would be an impeachable offense. We don't have a Congress though that's in place.
I think impeachment's off the table just based upon the time limits and the timing involved, and the fact that you can never get a conviction in the Senate. So let's talk in terms of criminal process. Could abuse of a constitutional authority constitute an obstruction of justice?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, clearly, I think it can. It can. I think it definitely can. So if the decision's made that a sitting president can be indicted, even if it's a sealed indictment, then I think you can still do it. You know, if he's using his pardon power in a way that is intended and designed to obstruct justice. You know, just like with this whole, firing Mueller, he said it was because of the Russia thing. And in recent days, he said, no, it wasn't because of the Russians. I never said that.
Yeah, even though it's recorded. Tape. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, video, audio,
Right there, Lester Holt, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, do you remember that, Donnie? Yeah, I mean, it's, this government is being run like a dictatorship, really. You know, it's like the topics du jour are, is Donald mad, who's Donald mad at, who's he going to fire now, is he going to fire Sessions or is?
Well, the story that broke over the past week about how he continued to berate Sessions in private,
begging him
to take jurisdiction over the Russia investigation back, and that he was unwilling to take no for an answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, what is this? Is this Zimbabwe we're talking about, or is this the United Frickin' States of America,
Yeah, but that takes me back to the whole issue of you can't indict a sitting president.
Mm-hmm.
That just drives me crazy. And that goes to what I was mentioning to you on the front end. Over at a website called attorneyio.com, there's a report of a panel of criminal law professors assembled by attorney.io to discuss and examine the possibilities of indicting the president.
Okay.
Again, it's over at attorneyio.com, and it says, breaking, Trump may already be indicted under seal. They brought together...
What makes them think that's the case,
Bob? They brought together... Professor Sonia Starr from Michigan Law School, University of Michigan. Okay. They brought in Professor Jenny Carroll from the University of Alabama.
Okay.
Professor Keith Findley from Wisconsin.
Okay.
Professor Joshua Dressler from Ohio State University.
Okay.
James Rogers, James Diamond from the University of Arizona.
Okay.
Jonah Goldschmidt from Loyola Chicago.
Okay.
Russell Covey from Georgia State.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Bowman from the University of Missouri. And they all discussed the issue of indicting a president.
Okay.
And the one conclusion they reached was that while the DOJ says that it would be an impermissible distraction of the president to indict him, they're of the opinion that an indictment under seal wouldn't impede him in the least, you know, mainly because he wouldn't know about it.
Yeah.
Well,
that would have to be a very well-kept secret to indict a sitting president with a sealed indictment and it not spill out. Of course, you know, that's done with drug traffickers all the time. And that, you know, that usually doesn't spill out, right?
Right. The guy from Arizona, Professor Diamond, said, of course, the premise that no person is above the law is a sound one. Yet a prosecution of a sitting president is a course of conduct no prosecutor or court ought to take lightly. Further, mm-hmm. the specter of the president taking time off from his critically important duties to defend himself from possible loss of liberty is also problematic.
Mm.
And I'm sorry, but my response to that is why? Because, you know, sometimes, and you know what, you and the Horn Family Community Congregation know what this means. Sometimes the reductio ad absurdum is instructive. And so if you take, you can't indict a sitting president,
mm-hmm.
and you hypothesize a sitting president who, to use his words, Trump's words, has shot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City,
mm-hmm.
then saying that it would be impermissible to indict him is utter hogwash.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do if it turns out that the people have elected a straight-up homicidal maniac?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the remedy if you wake up on the first Wednesday after the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, and your president's Charlie fucking Manson? What do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so tucked away in this argument is this notion that, well, you know, nobody that bad would ever be president. You know, bullshit. We've got that guy now.
Yeah.
You know, as was pointed out, I think it was Ron in Raleigh a little bit ago, pointing out the distinction between between say Samantha Bee and Donald Trump. Donald Trump confessed to committing sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Bee called his precious daughter an ugly word.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference there. But if it turns out that this guy, as we know, has given state secrets away to the Russians, you know, what was referenced with Kislyak,
mm-hmm.
if we know that everybody around him is up to their eyeballs in graft and corruption such that it can't help but touch him,
mm-hmm.
if we know, and we do, that he fired James Comey specifically to impede the investigation, then how can we cling to this diaphanous tissue of crap that somehow or another he doesn't deserve to be indicted? And I'm sorry, I'm not going to go along with the business of, well, you know, we'll just keep it under seal and let him wreck the, you know, let him murder somebody.
Yeah.
And right. we'll serve it on him the minute he's not president anymore. I mean, that is the law.
That's asinine.
In, well,
that's
it's
actually asinine, Bob.
It's the law pursuing an absurd result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's asinine in my opinion. Makes no sense. You know? I mean, you're saying he's not above the law, but he really is as long as he's president. Because, you know, I mean, there was I think there was a movie in the 80s about a president who killed somebody. I think it was called No Way Out with Sean Young was the actress, and I don't know who the president was. But he actually killed somebody. I don't know if it was a prostitute or something. And, I mean, that was sort of the premise of the movie.
Well, Professor Bowman from Mizzou said, the framers were clear in their expectation that civil officers, including presidents, could be charged and punished by ordinary courts. So it would seem odd, at the very least, that DOJ's policy of abstention should create de facto immunity. To the extent that DOJ's opinion on the point rests on the constitutional position of the president, a grant of de facto immunity is at least as contrary to constitutional principles as immediate indictment, if not more so. So then Professor Dressler said, as long as common sense is followed and a president is not jailed after indictment, perhaps an indictment should be permitted. Well, we all know that the only crime for which no bond is available is murder. Or perhaps that's not 100%, but it's pretty close.
Right.
So let's take that absurd hypothetical again. Let's say the president murders somebody. It's seen on 9 dozen cameras from 9 dozen angles. Mm-hmm. He's threatened the person 2 or 3 days before. I'm gonna kill you, sucker. And there's no question of intent. There's no question of self-defense. He just flat out cold-blooded murdered somebody. How do you even say that the president should not be jailed upon indictment?
There you go. Yeah, I don't.
These things strike me as, yes, they're academic exercises, but they're also desperate attempts to carve out some sort of a niche for the president that the president does not deserve. Not just President Donald Trump, any president.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, we've got a we don't just have a vice president because sometimes presidents get shot. We have a vice president because any time the president is unable to discharge the duties of his office, the vice mm-hmm. president, per the 25th Amendment, has to be able to take up the reins. And in fact, part of the reason we've got the 25th Amendment goes back to the post-World War I era when Wilson had his stroke, and the Congress, particularly the Senate, came to Thomas Riley Marshall, the Vice President of the United States, and said, please, please, please step in as acting president. And Marshall said, well, I will, if you'll give me the statutory authority, because Marshall had been quite a good lawyer himself.
This was what president? When Wilson got shot?
No, when Wilson had his stroke.
Stroke? Okay, yeah.
And Wilson's people, especially his wife Edith, were so paranoid that they wouldn't even let Thomas Riley Marshall anywhere near the president.
Oh, jeez.
Or very many other people, for that matter. Because they did not want anyone to see how thoroughly debilitated he was. He was not capable of making decisions. Edith Wilson made the presidential decisions and passed them out of the room.
Mm-hmm. Did Wilson ever recover functionality or not?
Not much.
Okay.
I mean, I think he got better, but I don't remember right off the bat. But it... There was a crisis then, and it was not properly dealt with is my larger point.
Right.
And every time they don't deal with it, and it was only with it was only as a result of Kennedy's assassination that we finally said, you know, we've really got to sort this, because it wasn't even clear when FDR died in office. It wasn't even necessarily constitutionally clear what Harry Truman was. Was he acting president? Was he the president?
Mm-hmm.
And so on an ad hoc basis, they decided, no, he's president now.
Mm-hmm. There was no succession authority in the Constitution for a vice president.
Well, there was authority, but it was not clear.
Oh, okay. Okay. Hmm.
I mean, at one point, I forget which president it was when he died in office, the vice president stepped in and refused to call himself the president.
Hmm. So was he the president then or not?
History is still, you know, there's no good answer to that.
So what was his name? Who was that?
I can't remember which one it was. This panel, however, if people go and read the report, they'll find that if Mr. Mueller does not indict in a timely fashion, Mr. Trump could claim the statute of limitations has passed and he is forever immune.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I guess that's where the sealed indictment comes into play, just to preserve the status quo.
To toll the statute.
Yeah, but there
statute
is also...
What limitations would it be?
Well, I'll tell you what, it would be the, you know, there's a 5-year statute of limitations or whatever on obstruction, I don't know, something like that. But this is the thing. If you hold an indictment under seal for what's considered an excessive amount of time, then the case can be dismissed once you unseal the indictment. If it's considered too long, or you didn't have a good reason for sealing, so he'd have defenses either way. So my prediction is nothing's going to happen to Deadbeat Donnie, unfortunately.
I fear the same, Rick. But what makes it worse is that means that where it was suspected at one point in time that the presidency was a get out of jail free card, it will become so de jure. As a matter of law.
Yeah, that's true.
Means that there will be a monster down the road, and there will be, as if Trump wasn't one, and that there will be no way to depose him. And that is 100% contrary to anything that the framers ever had in mind.
No, it's true. That's true. I mean, you have a king now as president. And, I mean, the whole imperial presidency sort of started to take hold after World War II, when we never declared war in Korea, for example. We started conducting police actions, supposedly. You know, and then we started trying to overthrow other countries without any kind of legal authority from Congress, without any declaration of war. And then Vietnam and, you know, the two Persian Gulf ones, I mean, there were some resolutions that authorized the war, I guess, but, I mean, not really a true declaration of war, you know? So, I mean, I suppose that's just the natural conclusion of giving the president, allowing him to accrete so many powers. And I guess that's the...
But if he gets away with it, this country is in more trouble than it knows.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in trouble in the future. Not even necessarily in the present.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there'll be a new dictator that comes along that is more effective and efficient than Trump, you know? Like a certain Eastern European dictator from
the 30s. And the thing is, that person is alive and lusting for power even now. We don't know who it is, but we know they're out there.
Maybe even in Congress. Who knows?
Right. Because there are people out there who have every bit as nasty impulses as Trump does, but actually know how government works.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can make an argument that, Mike Pencilneck Geek is one such person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's frightening. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not so sure about Pence if he's smart enough. He just doesn't seem very smart.
You know, he's a law school C student, just like me.
Oh, well.
And that's, you know, but the thing is, he also spent time in the House, and he also spent time as a governor of a state, so he knows how government arguably works.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, even idiots figure out how government works after two or three terms in the House and one in a governor's mansion.
That's true.
All right. Well, we are at the end of the program. Billable Rick, thank you very kindly for finishing off the challenge. Thanks to everybody else who jumped in on it. That's magnificent. I cannot thank you all enough. Thanks to everybody who jumped in and participated in the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Thank you to Sparky for moderating. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. It is humbling to be invited into your homes, your cars, your earphones each and every evening. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. It's the only way this thing continues. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.